why are you tuned to Truth News Radio on the 12th of February 2014? My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to the show. Well, I've got some interesting things lined up for you today, folks. In the second hour, I've got an interview coming up with Syrian girl, aka Mimi El Lahem, who has a YouTube channel and is an incredibly passionate and dedicated, and I would say brilliant, researcher on the Syrian crisis. And she's done a lot of very original investigative research into what is really happening in Syria. She is a Syrian by birth, but she's been living overseas for a number of years. But she loves her country. And she, in her videos that have been going for a few years now, has done an awful lot to expose the disinformation that we see so rampant in the major news outlets, you really see in stark relief in cases where there are major conflicts in the world. And quite often these major conflicts at various places in the world are actually deliberately engineered. There is heavy involvement of the powers that be, the Anglo-American Empire, the forces of international banking and oil and various other control structures on our planet. They like to control the world and have been doing so for many decades, and engineering changes of government, engineering regimes and the fall of regimes to suit their ends. Of course, with the appearance of the internet and independent blogging and YouTube, it has been possible for truly independent researchers and true investigative journalists to, and especially people who really care about the subject, people who, for whom the subject is important to them in a myriad of ways that is not the case with the blasé so-called investigative journalists that are hired that work for major news networks. There are people who do this because it's a life and death issue for them, because their families are involved, because their whole future is tied up with the outcome of certain situations. So we'll be talking to Mimi about some recent developments in the Syrian situation. We'll also be talking about the whole situation. We're kind of reviewing what's actually happened in Syria over the last year or so. We'll be reviewing the chemical attacks which occurred in 2013, which were the precursor to a whole lot of major diplomatic advances that we've seen with the UN-brokered deal, whereby the Syrian government agreed to hand over its stockpile of chemical weapons. And with that, the easing of the threats of military intervention from the United States. Now, Mimi, in some of her videos from last year, had been incredibly cynical and had warned that these were not truly good developments, that, in fact, by disarming Syria in this way, Syria was even more likely to be attacked. And I'm going to actually ask her opinion now, after another 6 months or so has gone by, whether she still stands by that view, and what we see unfolding now, and what is the likely prognosis for Syria over the next year or so. We're also going to be looking into some of the peculiar aspects of the media coverage in Syria. And we're going to be looking at the case in particular of one so-called investigative journalist by the name of Matthew Van Dyke, who Mimi has done a lot of work exposing as a fake and a mercenary on her video channel. And there have been a lot of attempts to shut her down and to have her videos removed as a result of what she said about this man, Matthew Van Dyke, a very interesting character indeed, an American who, it is now admitted, went to Libya and was involved, as he says, as a freedom fighter, assisting the Libyan rebels in the overthrow of Gaddafi's regime in Libya, before then heading off to Syria to start filming a documentary and calling himself an investigative journalist and providing logistical support for the rebels in Syria. Perhaps not so much logistical, but giving them advice and being somewhat of an advisor to them. I mean, it all sounds very CIA, doesn't it? It all sounds very sort of typical of what the Americans do when they get involved in conflicts, and they have these people who come in as advisors, often on a very covert level. This guy appears not to be covert, because he's certainly outed himself and was actually on CNN advertising himself as some kind of journalist. So it's difficult to actually figure this whole situation out, and this guy is a bit of a bizarre character. But what Mimi has done is exposed a lot of the just quite clearly dishonest and highly suspicious behaviour of Matthew Van Dyke. For instance, in Libya, leaked emails which had actually been retrieved from hackers in Syria, and she exposed the fact that that he had been calling for military experienced people to come join him for monetary gain to work as mercenaries for the rebels in Libya. She also exposed the fact that Matthew Van Dyke had boasted of making propaganda videos in Syria, whereby he would be interviewing so-called victims of the Syrian regime and would coach his actors to cry, would put onion juice into their eyes to make fake tears for his fake documentaries. And he was actually bragging and boasting about this to his mates, and even talked about how the whole thing was fake, and that indeed the Al Qaeda were largely involved in the rebel movement there in Syria, and even admitted that the rebel Al Qaeda insurgents had access to chemical weapons, which was a very important piece of prima facie evidence that went against the unanimous mainstream media kind of coverage that that it was clearly the Assad regime that had engaged in these dreadful chemical weapons attacks. But when at that time they were actually interviewing this guy, they were actually interviewing Matthew Van Dyke, but he never said that on the news feeds on CNN. But he was saying that privately to his friends. So a very interesting expose there that we'll be covering for you in the second hour with Mimi El Lahem. Now, in the first hour, I'm going to return to the Chappelle Corby case. There's some more things to discuss that have come up over the week. Of course, Chappelle was released earlier this week, and she is due to give an exclusive interview on Channel 7, I believe, in a few days' time. And she has actually not made any statements to the press at the time of recording this show, at least. And the media has just been going through its usual steps of basically smacking her around, you know, verbally, and really in a blasé way, just indicating that that they don't really give a stuff about Chappelle, while at the same time giving her all this media attention. A very bizarre kind of paradox here, which I explain, and I think I made the point in last week's show, is that I explain this by the fact that, well, she is a focus of interest because it is widely known around the world that she was somewhat of a political prisoner, and that the case against her was not really proven, and that the alternate explanation for why she ended up in prison, i.e. that there was a bag of marijuana that went astray that was being shipped around the country by baggage handlers from city to city, that this actually holds a huge amount of credibility, has actually been substantiated by research and reports even done from within the Australian Customs Service. And a lot of people know this, and I believe that that is actually why she is still so media worthy, despite the fact that the media coverage of her is all kind of just slapping her around and just never admitting that there is any question about her guilt, but sort of playing up the fact that she says she's innocent, but never really giving any attention to the mountain of information that that goes against the conviction that she received, the conviction of being a drug trafficker and the 20-year sentence. And oddly, not even often remarking on the fact that she was granted a significant sentence reduction, which is highly unusual in the fact that she never admitted guilt. She's never shown contrition. So to get sentence reductions for someone who doesn't admit guilt and show contrition, again, that's very much against the system in Indonesia. It's against the system in any country, actually. And one has to ask the question, why would that be? But of course, we know, and listeners to this show who listened to our interview last week with Jerry Georgatos will know that that figures within the Indonesian government have quietly come to the conclusion that she was probably not guilty. And I would argue that that was one of the main reasons why she was given significant sentence reductions. But of course, the authorities there are in a very heavy face-saving mode, and they're not ever going to publicly talk about this. But they do, I believe, want to wash their hands of Chappelle Corby. And in the wake of the ongoing diplomatic problems that Indonesia has with Australia over the people smuggling issue and also over the illegal spying and surveillance issues, the Indonesian authorities will certainly get a bit of pleasure out of the discomfort that the Australian government is going to be put under by Chappelle being now released. You're listening to Truth News Radio. We're just about to go to break, and when we come back, we'll be getting on with the show. So do stay with us.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio. Well, continuing on from where we left off there before the break, let me just explore a bit further this question of the real reasons why Chappelle Corby is the focus of still such a huge media frenzy. It's because the truth, ladies and gentlemen, the truth has a way of getting through despite all the efforts of the criminals to keep it suppressed. It just keeps seeping through, like you just can't stop it because there's always a surge towards knowledge. There's always, however difficult and however oppressed we may be and however suppressed the facts may be, there's always this kind of urge towards the truth. And that's part of the deeper spiritual nature of who we are and the kind of the quest we're on. It's a very important quest, and it's the reason I do this show. You cannot underrate its importance. And truth has always been, in every culture, a value that's very important morally. I mean, truth and morality really go together. And we live in very immoral times, and this pendulum now that has swung so far in this sort of amoral, immoral direction, there's a lot of momentum now that's wanting to bring that pendulum back in the other direction, back towards the higher values. But here's something to consider, and I urge you to really ponder this very deeply, because I think it's just a very important reflection to make about the nature of the way we quest for truth. When we discover something that's very, very important that we didn't know before, it changes everything. Like it influences how we think, how we feel. It becomes not just emotional, not just intellectual, but it becomes emotional. And it becomes, one might call it religious, when one discovers a new truth. And indeed, religious revelation, particularly in Christianity, is often described that way. They're often one and the same thing. We talk about revelation, we talk about epiphanies, we talk about realizing some sort of truth. Now, I'm not here to talk to you about Christianity, and that's not my angle. I'm just describing the way in which it is actually perceived by a lot of people. But there is also a problem with that, because when we talk about truth in a factual scientific sense, the way you feel about it is actually irrelevant. The emotional connection you have with it is irrelevant. And the only thing that's important is the scientific approach, the evidence, and whether you can substantiate claims. But when we discover something very important, we often tend to, we get so carried away with it that we adopt this kind of evangelical position in relation to it. And I think that in the Chappelle Corby case, I think that has happened. And that's partly why there is this incredible media attention on the Chappelle Corby case, because there are so many evangelical people out there now proclaiming that Chappelle is innocent. And I don't want to say that's bad, but there is a problem with it, because it does come off sounding a little bit loopy when it's framed that way. And I don't intend to frame it that way. It's just that it can easily be framed that way, and that's the way the media is framing it. That's the way, you know, people have been pigeonholed into that little box of fanatics, of truthers, you know, Chappelle truthers who just ignore everything other than their own kind of tunnel vision. And you know, how do we steer a straight course and not allow that stereotyping of what we're doing to have any traction? Well, I think it is important to to be careful about how we present evidence. It's important to try and detach how we feel, and things like absolute certainty from the discussion, because absolute certainties are actually the realm of religion. They're not the realm of science. So when people say they know absolutely that Chappelle is innocent, that doesn't really help. I understand when you're with your mates or whatever, and when you're just talking about it, saying what you think, it's fine. But when you're actually trying to make an argument, if you say, I'm absolutely certain that, you know, that she's innocent, that doesn't actually come off too well. Because, you know, you're not God. How could you be absolutely certain? You'd have to be like in a godlike state. I mean, in many cases where a defendant has been acquitted or a conviction overturned, there is still no absolute certainty. It's just, well, there was that much reasonable doubt that we had to let them off. I mean, you know, celebrated cases like Lindy Chamberlain, we don't really know, do we? We don't really know what happened because we weren't there. But we know that the case against Lindy Chamberlain was unsound. We know the police followed, they didn't follow the correct protocols, and appeared they manufactured evidence against Lindy Chamberlain. So the conviction was quashed. And there have been, many celebrated cases in history where convictions have simply been overturned because the prosecution failed to prove their case, and then it went to appeal and it was proven that the prosecution failed. It wasn't proven that the person was innocent. You cannot prove someone is innocent. It's very, very, maybe in some very rare cases you might be able to, but most of the time you cannot. And I certainly don't think in the case of Chappelle that you could ever prove she was innocent. So with that in mind, I actually want to play to you an interview that came up on Facebook with a chap by the name of John Waite, who I might try to get on the show at some point, because he called into a radio show in Australia with hosted by a man by the name of John Laws, a veteran radio host, and some might say an infamous radio host who goes back many, many decades in Australia and is known to be a right-wing son of a gun. He's a very, very hard case, very, very opinionated, very biased, bigoted, shock jock of Australian radio, who is an expert at shooting people down, an expert in making people who call in look stupid, and really revels in his little power trip that he has. And anyone who sort of wanders into his den needs to be very, very careful and very aware of the fact that you're dealing with a grade A predator here. You're dealing with a prize fighter expert who knows how to bring you down, and you won't even know it's happening. Like, and you might even think you did okay, but you know, you listen to it. When people listen to it back, you'll see he took you out, right? Now I'm going to play to you some of this interview this phone-in that was done with John Laws, and I'm going to actually give you my commentary on it. I think it's a very interesting learning exercise, because we can actually we can see, I believe, where the caller made some good points, where he fell into a trap, and we can learn from this, and hopefully we can all get better at debate, and especially debating someone as masterful and crafty and actually wicked as John Laws undoubtedly is. So, well, when we come back from the break, I'll bring you this ad hoc interview with John Laws about Chappelle Corby's innocence. A very interesting case study. Do stay with us. Welcome back to the show. Well, as I said before the break, I'm going to play you now a clip from a John Laws radio program in Australia with a caller who called in to raise some questions about the Chappelle Corby case and to basically advocate for the possibility that she may well indeed be innocent. Here we go.
John.
Hello.
Yes, John.
Hi, John. How are you going?
Pretty good.
Yeah, just listening to your show and want to discuss the Chappelle Corby issue.
All right, go for your life.
Well, I mean, it's interesting how so many people are quite so easy to vilify her, yet there's also an incredible amount of evidence that would suggest that she's actually innocent of the crime that she's been charged of.
Rubbish.
Well, you may say it's rubbish, John, but I mean, if you're not spreading all the facts, it's easy to say that, isn't it?
I see. So the court got it wrong, everybody got it wrong.
Well, I'm not saying that they all got it wrong, but what I'm saying, well, in fact, they actually did, because if you, there's an awful lot of evidence, and it depends if you want to actually do a little bit of background digging yourself. And
okay, but so what are you saying? She didn't know it was in the bag, or she didn't put it in the bag?
Well, she didn't put it in the bag. That's a start, because the check-in weight was actually below the weight when it was screened. What? Also, they never checked for country of origin.
Okay, I'll just pause it there. I just wanted to comment on the fact that John called in to say that there was an incredible amount of evidence to suggest that Chappelle was innocent, and that I think is fine. Although it might have been better to say there is an incredible amount of evidence that casts doubt on her guilt. This may seem like I'm being pedantic, but it's really not. It's really important because evidence that she's innocent and evidence that casts doubt on her guilt convey two different things. Because, you see, proving innocence is not something we actually need to do. We don't need to prove innocence. We don't need to show evidence that she's innocent. We just need to show evidence that conflicts with the conclusion that she must be guilty, right? It's not, and this is the way our legal system works, but we have to take that perspective. And of course, we can get into a big argument about cultural differences and legal differences in different countries, but that's a different argument. Let's just talk about our legal system. We don't have to demonstrate that a person is innocent. It is up to the prosecution to demonstrate that a person is guilty. So I would just say that that John could have started off on a better angle, because as you start, so must you proceed. If you start with this thing of we're going to show she's innocent, then you will be led down that path. And this is what I believe John Laws did with this caller, is he was led down the path to keep trying to prove she's innocent, right? Actually, it's an impossible thing. You can't do it. There is just... so much doubt in any situation, right, about what really happened, that as I was saying in the earlier segment, we can never have absolute knowledge. You know, maybe the person themselves can know absolutely, but even in some cases the person themselves can't know, because they might have forgotten, or there's all kinds of issues that even you yourself might not know whether you did something, right? So indeed, proving innocence, very difficult if not impossible. Proving reasonable doubt, whole other category. So the debate would have gone much better, I believe, if the caller had simply started with a very, very modest position of just stipulating that there was a lot of reasonable doubt here. Anyway, let's continue with the interview, and I will make more interjections as we go.
So who put it in there?
Well, if you look at, there's a website that's got all the information you do.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go again to the website. There's just so much BS on the web.
Everything they actually have on the website, John, is actually provable and evidential.
I see. And who puts this stuff on the website, and where is the evidence?
Well, go to the website and they'll show you where they have all the evidence. They actually back up all their statements. I'm not saying that I have all the answers to this, John, but what I'm saying is I've actually looked at the material from both sides.
Who made the website?
You'd have to speak to the website people about that. I don't have every single answer on that.
Well, I mean, anybody could have...
Expendable.tv. and it's got the documentary in it that explains all. I mean, the Australian Federal Police were incriminated in it, the baggage handlers, the politicians, and it was basically, if it came out that
okay, John,
she was involved. Well, you can cut me off, or you could listen. It's up to you.
Okay, I'll just pause it again there. Now, it's good that the caller got in expendable.tv. It's very important to get that website URL into the discussion. But unfortunately, by leading with the website so early in the discussion, it gave John Laws a golden opportunity to basically just go off on a red herring tactic of attacking the credibility of the website. And it wasted a whole lot of time without any valuable information coming through. And John Laws is sort of demanding to know what the credibility of the website is. And of course, the caller can't give him that. And it didn't really aid his argument at all. I mean, the caller's argument. I really think that in situations like this, it is really not a good idea to start referring to an external source as your main argument. You actually have to have the information, the key bullet points that you're trying to communicate in your own head, right? Later on, towards the end, you can certainly refer to the website. Oh, by the way, there's a great website which has more information about this. But when you lead with the website, it does make you look as if you're kind of, it's a bit of a crutch. Because, you know, well, what is this website? It's like your Bible, okay? It's just like you worship this website. Well, why? And then it seems reasonable that he's asking all these questions about it, and then the caller can't substantiate. He doesn't really know. Well, because in fact the website is anonymous. But the expendable.tv has a lot of great information. I'm not knocking it. It really is a good website. But we're talking here about the tactics of the way you actually communicate. And these are very easy traps to fall into. But folks, don't minimize the importance of not falling into these traps, because how we convey ourselves and how we communicate is central. But and I really applaud what this guy's done. And I don't wish to come across as being a smart ass and just you know, having a go at what this caller has said. We need a lot more people doing this kind of thing. And we all, you know, those of us who know things need to get better at communicating and better at debating. Anyway, let's continue.
I'm not cutting you off. I'm just saying you can believe what you want to believe.
Well, but, so can you. But I mean, it's easy when you only have one side of the story painted to the public through the media, which is kind of owned and controlled by two rule sources, isn't it?
Owned and controlled by two...
Well, there's Fairfax Media and News Corp. They're the only two. There's only two phone calls to make sure that the news that gets out is the ones that want, is the news that they want to be broadcast.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of AAP?
AAP? Who's that?
Yeah. It's a news service. You can check it anytime you like, and there are plenty of other news services as well. And Fairfax and, who did you say, Murdoch, certainly don't control the media in Indonesia, to my knowledge. And same stories are being run in Indonesia about Chappelle Corby. There's now quite a lot of interest in Chappelle Corby. So what are you telling me that you believe she's innocent?
Well, I believe she's innocent of the charges committed, and I mean, surely as well that...
Okay, I'm just going to pause it there again, because I really want to comment on the brilliant tactics that John Laws uses in this debate, because he keeps taking the caller off in different tangents that go nowhere. He makes a number of big boo-boos in what he says, which could actually be shot down, but which would probably be better to have ignored completely. But firstly, I think the caller made a very important point about the centralised concentration of control of media in Australia. But then, of course, John Laws threw in the random red herring about AAP. And, of course, AAP supplies news to both Fairfax and News Corp. And that could have been pointed out. And then, of course, John Laws mentions the Indonesian news. And, of course, it could have been, you could say to him, well, tell us, John, what are they saying in Indonesia? He doesn't have a clue. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio, and I'm playing an interview that was conducted on John Laws Radio in Sydney, I believe, in Australia, this week, and I'm just making some commentary and analysis of the debate that ensued. It wasn't actually an interview, I'm sorry I keep saying that, it was actually just a phone-in, but the debate that ensued was actually quite an interesting one from the point of view of the style and tactics of argument. Now, as I was saying there before the break, John Laws is a master, and he's very underhanded. And he went off on a sidetrack there because the door was opened to him by the caller talking about the media in Australia being controlled by two major sources, and then John Laws threw in AAP as a foil to that, and then quickly shifted to talking about the press in Indonesia, which I'm sure he doesn't really have a clue about. But then he did his most masterful stroke of all, without even really waiting for a reply. He just used up a lot of time and made himself sound important and bombastic. He then suddenly switched to, "So you believe Chappelle's innocent?" So the caller didn't really even have time to engage with the smokescreen there that the John Laws created by calling the claims about media control rubbish. He didn't even give the caller a chance to really engage with that. He just suddenly switched back to his major attack point, his major weak point that he'd already found in the caller, which is that the caller thinks that that Chappelle is innocent. So he immediately returned to that. He says, "So you think Chappelle is innocent?" And this, of course, then becomes bait. This is bait. This is very, very dangerous, right? Because whether you or I think she's innocent or guilty is not really a very important consideration. I mean, we're not like experts who've been wheeled into a trial to give our opinion. My opinion in this case is that she's blah, 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 right? And even in that, even in the case of a court case where experts are brought in, they're generally not even allowed to say what their opinion of innocence or guilt is. You know, their expert opinion is generally confined to some discrete piece of information. So it is of no consequence whether you think she's guilty or not. It's like, what's the evidence? What's the evidence that she's guilty? And is there doubt? What's the doubt about that evidence? What's the conflicting evidence? How well was this evidence prepared? And this is what we stick with. But John Laws cleverly gets the caller to revert to this question about he believes she's innocent. And then it becomes like it's almost like this person is talking about his belief, right? So let's just continue from that point.
When you're asked then in trial, you should be presumed innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, well, that's British justice.
There was an awful lot of things that didn't go in her favour in that regard. Now, you have to start wondering, well, is there an issue that she was made expendable due to the fact that the government and other major issue companies or departments would have been incriminated by her by this? So therefore, they had to hang her out to dry, effectively. Now,
I just want to say briefly that he started off there brilliantly. That was a really excellent rejoinder there, where he reverted back to the principle of proven guilty, innocent until proven guilty. That works well up to this point, but let's see what happens next.
What concerns me more than anything else here, John, is that really could have been any single one of us.
I mean, look, you talk about the weight of the bag. There's never been any categorical proof that the bag was weighted. Hang on, don't interrupt me. Let me finish. There is no categorical proof that the bag was weighed at either end, here or there. No proof at all.
Well, there is. If you go to the website, they have it all.
Oh, the bloody website. Don't talk to me about the website. Anybody can put anything they like on the website.
Yes, but on that, they have all the evidence and they actually support it with the documentation that proves this. None of the cameras were working that day, which is very, very convenient.
Okay, sorry, I just have to interject again. Now, did you notice how John Laws immediately sidestepped this key issue, this key point about proving that she's guilty, innocent until proven guilty, by then diverting back to some factoid about whether they weighed the bags and the evidence that the caller raised that there was a discrepancy in the weight of the bags, and John Laws is now calling into question that evidence, right, and actually raising some possibly legitimate criticisms of the claims about the baggage weight. And I actually know this from my own research on the topic, because the real case about the bag weight is that she was not charged excess baggage fees, even though her bag was overweight. There was no secondary weighing of the bag at the other end. This is a big problem, and a big problem in that it could have helped the defence, but her bag was not actually weighed at the other end, and no ability to get that sort of comparison weights. But anyway, we haven't got a lot of time left in the show, so I'm just going to continue with some of the interview here, and if I don't get through the interview, there'll be a link to it on the show notes of today's show.
Okay, the bag of marijuana fitted perfectly inside the boogie board cover. There's no way a baggage handler could have organised that so quickly. Obviously, it was... Hang on. It was obviously tailored to fit that bag.
Well, how do you know that?
Well, everybody knows it. It's the evidence.
Well, who's everybody? I mean, you talk about the general public?
Yeah, well, of course they do. We talked about it the other day, that the bag that contained the marijuana was cut to the shape, was tailored to the shape of the bag.
Well, okay, that's an interesting one. I hadn't heard that piece of information.
No. Well, before you shoot your mouth off in a rather aggressive way, hang on. Just be quiet. Just be quiet.
That's a rather rude thing to say to a person phoning in, you.
What?
Well, just be quiet and shut your mouth. That's not very...
No, I didn't say that. I said before you shoot your mouth off. I didn't say shut your mouth, but you might as well do that while you're at it.
Oh, that's rude.
It's not... Well, I don't care if it's rude or not. I mean, you are basing an argument in relation to justice and a justice system on a website?
Well...
Again, see how brilliantly John Laws zeroes in on one of the major weaknesses in the caller's argument is relying on this website, you know, holding up the website as a shield. This is a weak position that John Laws is taking advantage of, and just relentlessly pushing it home. And he's also jumping around, criticising different pieces of evidence. And again, the caller doesn't even get a chance really to address the claims about the bag and whether it, the plastic bag within the boogie board bag, whether it did exactly match the bag's dimensions or not. I think it's absolute rubbish. I've seen the photographs. It was just a plastic bag of a pretty standard size, and it just happened to fit inside the boogie board bag. I mean, whoever put it in the bag was probably looking for a container for that plastic bag that would be about the right size for it. So you can make the opposite argument. You can say, well, the baggage handler who placed it in the boogie board bag was looking for something that would contain it, right? And the boogie board bag happened to match it. There were hundreds of bags he could have chosen. He chose the boogie board bag because it matched it. And, of course, there are other points about the plastic bag having been slashed open. So we can't really talk about whether it exactly fit the bag or not, because when it was put in there, it would have been sealed, right? And when it was sealed, it probably would have been a hard, rigid thing, which would not necessarily have perfectly matched anything, because it would have been vacuum sealed, which is the way they normally do this. Anyway, just a few points there of my own. Continuing now to return to the interview.
There has to be some method of trying to get this information out to the public so that the real story comes out. And the simple fact of the matter is, when it does, eventually, it will show Australia for exactly what they've been incriminated for.
Yeah, could you tell me what credibility that website might have that you're talking about?
Well, I mean, why don't you actually look at it yourself and just maybe just, you know, look at it with a neutral pair of eyes and actually just examine both sides of the argument rather just blindly accepting what you know, you're told in the media. And by, I mean, was it the police commissioner, was it McKilty, was it at the time? I can't remember his name exactly. The Australian Federal Police Commissioner at the time. His actual quote was, there is very little evidence to suggest. Okay, now, I mean, that is actually cleverly worded, because it doesn't say there is no evidence, it just says there is very little.
Look, but also, okay, but you are talking about something 10 years after the fact. Surely if let me finish.
Yeah.
Surely if there was anything credible that she was innocent, you'd think it would have surfaced by now. Well, you're talking about something that happened 10 years ago. Anyway, if you want to believe she's innocent, fine. No, you're entitled to believe whatever you want to believe.
I don't believe it. I know it.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, at this point, unfortunately, it starts to go south, because as soon as you say, I don't believe it, I know it, you're coming off sounding a little bit like a fanatic. And of course, John Laws has a lot of fun with that.
Do you know it?
Well, I do, because I've actually looked at both sides of the coin.
But where have you looked? On the internet.
Well, there's an awful lot of information there, and every single thing that they claim, they can prove.
Look, anybody can put anything on the internet. How do you know that information?
Of course I can, John, but you also have to use discernment, and I do actually exercise that as well.
You have to what?
You have to exercise discernment when you look at these things and weigh up your own, you know, you have to take it on your own basis and make your own opinion on what you believe.
Yeah.
All right, that's about all we have time for today. The caller has my great admiration, and it was a very important and worthwhile thing to call into John Laws. I think we can all learn from this type of stuff. So I will be placing the link to this show, to the John Laws show, on my website, and I welcome any comments on it. And I look forward to speaking to you again next week. But do stay tuned for hour two of the show, Mimi El Laham, a.k.a. Syrian Girl, for the full hour, coming on to talk to us about the Syrian situation, propaganda, and the American disinformation agent Matthew Van Dyke. Very, very important hour coming right up. Don't go away.